Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is a regular study session for July 17th, 2018. The time right now is 7:01 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly, council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cuddeback, Hanford, Davis, Rasmussen, and Campbell.
Thank you. And I heard from Councilmember Campbell over the weekend on Sunday that he would not be here this evening. So without objection, let's please consider him as an excused absence. Will everybody please rise and Councilmember Scarborough, please lead us in the pledge.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
Just wait until everybody has their thing. FPSD served 2,258 unduplicated participants in calendar year 2017. Our volunteers provided 6,310 hours of volunteer service in calendar year 2017. We are celebrating 50 years of service in the Monroe community in 2018. We changed the name to the Monroe Community Senior Center to better reflect who and where we serve. Updated the logo and the brand. The logo is on my car. I don't know if you guys remember the old logo was a tree that said BTSD underneath it. So just updating data book. Supposed to make the logo that looks like it looks cool on a hat. Loss of $30,000 from United Way. We are still getting that ended in fiscal year 16. United Way, I live around in front of poverty and homelessness, and that falls in your center's office. So we're still kind of working through that. Our newest loss of revenue was from our bingo program. Senior Center is kind of going through a redesign overall in the country. The seniors that like bingo are kind of not pushed around anymore. The new groups like different things. So you can see the numbers there for that. Our rent, our gross rent for the Senior Center has risen quite a bit actually over the last few years. The fiscal year 18, just ended last month. Fiscal year 17, we were at 30,200. Fiscal year 16, we were at 18,600. 16, we're at 17,000. So it's gone up steadily. You can see our expenses and income there. The change you see there is reflected with bingo. Bingo, we used to budget quite a bit before. In fiscal year 15, bingo was budgeted to as an income at $111,000 to pay out $88,000 with a net of $22,500. You can see fiscal year 18, our net was down to $9,400. Slowly gone down. Fiscal year 16, our net was 7, December 17, or 1965. Kind of the way it is of doing things, our event bingos are a lot better now. We've never done event bingos, so we started those last, about a year and a half we've done those. This October will be our third October Fest bingo, which is what people, the newer generation, want to see more live bingo than we have in the ring. Our mobility lifeline, the city of Monroe funds that $15,000 a year. It steadily grows since 2008 when we started that program. To date, we've had 22,063 rides. Most of those are in the city limits. The third that aren't coming into the city limits to spend their dollars on different services, doctors, hair appointments, grocery stores, bringing them into shopping. We definitely don't want ambulances on the road. So I don't have licenses. We don't want that license. So it's good. It's a good service that people really like to be able to take the bus and stay in the city. The value MCSC brings to the city of Monroe is tremendous. Linwood Senior Center, for example, is part of their Parks and Rec department. Their budget for fiscal year 17 was $1,149,000 covered by the city. MCSC has a smaller budget, but almost the exact same things done in the community. We have a bus service, they don't. We do a couple different things that they do. And they do have some things that we don't. So, for the senior centers get together, the directors get together once a month, trying to get all on the same page and offer more services to the county. Unified, I guess. You know, if people want a senior center that does a lot of hiking and biking, skiing, we send them over to the senior center. They specialize in that kind of stuff. We have a great staff right now. Our hearts are all in the right place. But they really are all in the right place. As I wanted to put on the mission of New York Police Career Parents, both physical, emotional, and being older adults, and to promote their participation in all aspects of community life. And as a standalone nonprofit, I urge my staff to follow that mission. So when there's things that come along that are outside that mission, we do our best to do that. It's really that.
Thank you. We only
offer our listeners 8 miles in the green zones.
Oh, wow.
We've always had interest from people, so I'm just really interested in
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions from council members?
Just going off the mission statement, I'm wondering, you guys looking at any sort of support type stuff for a lot of our seniors that have spouses that are dealing with Alzheimer's dementia?
We have had in the past, we don't have one right now. It comes and goes. I think coming from a retirement home in my previous life, I guess, different years before. There's a lot of burnout in that field, so we've had caregiver support groups, and I think they suck in a lot of emotional stuff, and they don't last too long. In the years I've been there, we've had several different iterations of support groups. We're not trying to find them.
Any other council members with questions or comments? Thank you very much for everything you do. We really appreciate the great work you're doing here. Thank you. So the next item we have on our agenda this evening is public comment. This is time set aside for members of the public to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the city of Rock, except any positive additional matter for the subject of the public hearing. We do have a sign-in sheet that we have signed in. Is there any member of the public that would like to come forward this evening to speak to the council? Seeing none, go ahead and move on to council member reports. Do any council members have any council member reports? Go ahead and start off with finance and human resources committee update. Any report from the finance and human resources? Thank you, council member Rochester.
I'll take it. Okay. So let's see.
Anybody else have a
baseball club has wrapped up their last tournament. They were outstanding and all around the state, even up in Canada, for the Midsummer Madness deal. They came down 10U, 12U, 13U, 16U this year. But just great use of facilities across the board. Skyward Park, Rotary, and then Skyward, which is great. And it's always great to hear, you know, comments like that. There's a good sports complex, and so that, you know, that type of stuff. So, really nice when the sun's out. They did a great job. And, gone for so long, they have a radio operator to do, like, they didn't worry about on vacation. Really enjoyed that. So, thank you for the invite. I actually found out that one of the gentlemen that I worked with was very involved in this.
Cool. Anybody else with a report? All right, Mary, I'm sorry. I was looking down.
No problem. Last Thursday, I attended breakfast at in Everett from the Great Northwest corporate game. So, Tammy Dunn from the Orange County Tourism Bureau set this up. Just an outside business that can come in and set up corporate games for the local. We are a big company that then meet against each other, and they might hold these games throughout the county at different sites throughout the county. So they intend to bring people into the whole county from the city that the Great Midwest to South Everett and elsewhere. And it's kind of big in Orange County because it's close to Seattle, but it has, you know, ability to host something like that, so it can draw people in from the local.
Getting more to come on that. There's a gap possibly in 2019, and then a small game, and then maybe here after 2020.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. Customer Hanford. Thanks. I won't be here next week, so I thought I should report out just briefly on the legislative and just that. So, two things. When we were talking about the selection for the
lobbyists,
so that we made a recommendation for six staff, so we'll see that in next week's agenda. And then the other thing that we talked about from the committee is them traveling those that can. Or I'm interested in to D.C. to lobby in the city of the town. Wondering if our previous lobbyists, current lobbyists, let's present this evening was the Economic Alliance of Orange County is traveling in late September. So just found out about that, something that is talking about. That's going to be the numbers. I don't know yet if the three of us are all interested yet or not, or if there's others that are interested. But I'm just throwing that out there because I want to be here next week. So it's something on the radar that we're discussing.
Okay. Anybody else to report? Okay. City Administrator report.
Reminder that the council chambers remodel is going to begin effective August 1st. So our meetings in August are scheduled for the fire district. And that's in their for the meetings in the month of August, those are going to be held in which room over at the fire station?
Yes, so it's the meeting room, and I think it's the training room. Brad, is that the official name? Yes. So it's the training room at Station 31. So it's just the one off Village Way, and there's ample parking right there. We will have signage here on the door, and we will also be posting public notices, of course, saying that all these meetings will be relocated. And I think we might even have a little map kind of leading people from here to there, because I know the court's prepared something like that because they will also be relocating. So rest assured, we will have something so that if somebody shows up here, they can get to where we are.
like going to Disneyland with old friends or something.
And just as fun.
Okay, you can start the table with the agenda for next week, the 24th, the extended agenda. If you've got any questions or have, please feel free to reach out to staff. If not, let us know what your concerns are. The next item I want to make you aware of my report. We did receive an email from somebody in the public that placed a print copy there, along with an email that was sent to each of you about garbage pickup. Remember, somebody came in to talk about garbage pickup last week. When I went back to my house last night, Tuesday night, and I also found my entire block had been missed. So I understand that two neighborhoods were impacted by garbage not being picked up on Tuesday last week. And then again, we received this email earlier today. I wanted to make you aware of it. The backside is the email that I received about experience with Republic. The front side is a response from the staff. Becky's here. She can certainly answer. Ms. Hassard is here, so she can answer any questions you might have. But the short end of it is that we are working with Republic right now to fix the problems that we're experiencing at this time. And again, Ms. Hassard is certainly filling in more. And I'm going to go ahead and acknowledge the signs that are out there. See who was first. I'll go ahead and start with Councilmember Rasmussen and Ms. Harbor and Councilmember Rasmussen.
I'm sure you guys are probably already aware of it. It's happening again today. It's happening today. It's happening today.
Yeah.
I received the 5 minute phone call saying, I understand the circumstance. A little frustrating, I know that was a big part of the garbage contract negotiations.
Okay. Thank you for letting me know.
Basically the same report. We didn't have it picked up today. I called. We needed somebody right away and said she'd pass it on. I didn't get the other day to call. We saved things for that. Same frustration in our neighborhood. I can't say that I've seen some of the, I haven't seen the complaints in this one, but we're not leaving garbage around the nuclear neighborhood, although down at the apartments at the bottom of the one drive west, and I picked up that container, so there was a lot of garbage left around, and it was like, put down the street, basically. So, yeah, the frustration is there, and it's the same problem.
Thank you. Councilor Cutler.
Well, clearly, a different neighborhood. Yes, the council has the same thing that wasn't like that. We cited the whole not like that. I did receive an automated phone call that said, of course, it was fraud. So they gave up. And then picked up another, I've never called them last week. I didn't call them to go. He called me yesterday and was like,
we'll be following up with Republic and Ms.
Knight. Just a reminder that Republic is able to come to your council meeting on August 21st, so this would be an opportunity then to share with the chairman, Richard, the representative of the concern that you're sharing with us tonight, who also has to respond to the professors and has done an outstanding job at channeling those and asking for a response. Conversations with them today, I didn't make it very clear to them. I mean, I understand they're having the same hiring problems as everyone else.
Yeah.
However, and they did share with me, and I thought it was very candidly done, that they are also having these challenges in both
back to them in an email responding to potential particular resident. They did offer them, they contacted me outside of the customer service line to be able to email so that they can get a better handle on all the areas to try and hone in on exactly what they can do to try to get the correct amount of response. So, you know, again, we're staying on top of them and so we'll look at the satisfaction.
Yeah, any further council members? We'll give you an update again next week on where things are with this. And it would be nice if the Republic could let us know that they're missing a neighborhood. If they're doing automated phone calls to our residents, I'd like an email I've sent to the council so that and obviously we went this night. If they have the foresight to know that they can make phone calls, they can certainly notify us also. Thank you. Yes,
Councilor. So we're meeting with them on the 23rd. We basically have a little bit of view of the contract and what just obligations, certain standards obligations, and what would be around for them not really up to the contract. That would be good. Just to know what's there, right? Because I think the other thing that, you know, also the service levels from the call center, which is the non-going deal, that's kind of there and then it's not there, it's kind of done with that.
Okay. So we'll add to one of our upcoming agendas a discussion on those items. Get out of the contract, like that, we can have a little bit more direct conversation with the consultant.
Yeah,
absolutely. Okay. Anything further, council members? All right, I've got one more thing to report out on for the parade this year. We adopted a new code that allows for heavy ATVs on city streets. From Polaris has agreed to allow us to ride heavy ATVs this year. So it's going to be different for us this year, and I'm excited about having something that. So we'll be getting an email out to you. I don't know if you're just side by side, so we're seeing if you're one of the first time we'll be meeting with the driver, but we'll get the information out. It should be fun and different this year. I think I called, what happened here was that I was riding with somebody on a WATP on our streets and I made a phone call with Jason.
So it was coffee with the mayor is what it was.
Well, that's what it was, coffee with the mayor.
Mayor
was riding the night before.
And I told you that I was planning on doing it anyway.
Yeah. So, okay, we're good. So, thank you very much.
Yes.
Trying to put it together.
Thank you. I think Jason might be bringing this up, so.
Yeah, I might be able to.
Ask my customer base to see if they can help me.
Okay.
Three or four so far, so I think we'll go together. Thank you. And then if you guys have anything else to refer on this evening, let's go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. And that is discussion items. So we have two discussion items this evening. The first one is AD 18-153, no parking in cul-de-sacs, signage. Councilman Scarborough, can you see okay? I'm going to do this so we can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Okay. The city requires the construction of cul-de-sacs with a minimum radius of 45 foot diameter. With two flats and the streets are wooded. And the reason for this diameter or radius is working with the fire district, it was a fire district 3007, is that their trucks, their average size trucks, need that much room to turn around. And they like to have backup from 50 feet. So cul-de-sacs, the longer than 50 feet required for the use of a cul-de-sac, most often you've got 45 foot radius. And then also the municipal code, you have a copy in your packet, previously stopping standing and parking with the fire lanes and defined fire lanes as areas designated for fire truck travel. That's attachment two. In the past, it was assumed that it was owned by residents, and timing was not needed to say there was no parking again. That was set up there at the beginning. But we have received requests from the fire district 7, and the most recent one, which started this process, was on May 22nd regarding the cul-de-sac at the 17800 block of 152nd Street, which is just west of the hospital. On June 5th, the city staff installed the requested signs, and in the case of the president, attended that night's council meeting and was wishing that the city would not do that, so we could work for this house. We brought you the June 12th meeting, we brought you the fire department's request, and also the room municipal code, which was also included in the site. And then you asked that the number of cul-de-sacs that there are in the city and which ones are signed, you asked for that information, that's the original information you brought that tonight. So on the screen in front of you, the ones that are the kind of orangey color are the cul-de-sacs that have signage to say they're parking, and the blue ones, sorry, the orangey ones are the ones that don't have signage, and the blue ones are the ones that do have signage. And like, just because of the case-by-case basis, on the new ones that I brought in most recently, like the one on the chain link over there, we required that at the kind of flat, but otherwise we've done it on a case-by-case basis based on the fire department's observation that people have been parking there. So this is a time for the council to discuss this issue. We have any ideas or things you'd like to do. A couple things we thought about is we put signage on all those cul-de-sacs that can cost up to $25,000 for both the wages and the materials. And then other things you can think about is install signage on all the existing ones, just install signage for the new ones. Keep doing it on a case-by-case basis in the entire district says there's an issue. Or either I then met the municipal code to specifically say that it's limited to park on cul-de-sacs, and it is sort of a three-tiered process now to find that code section, or actually say that it is allowed in cul-de-sacs.
That's from code
Yes. Thank you, Brad. And one of the reasons why we did this issue and what we brought up before, because I constantly looked at all the streets, and I thought it was because the fire district looked at kind of how wide roads were, and we talked about a farm and in a neighborhood where really, ideally, we wouldn't have parking on those sides of the street, we only had it up there. And to refresh my memory, was that due to recommendations from the fire district?
That was also, yeah, that actually came out with the fire department's request to limit parking down on 171st.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's why when I thought change made a help with that, when we had gone through a process of talking about it and the recommendation from the fire district and the council, because I did not proceed with limiting parking and other neighborhoods due to the effect it would have on residents. When this came up, it was a surprise to me, how is this different than what we discussed with parking from side streets or streets with the recommendation from the fire district? So I'm trying to understand what the difference is, what we decided before of not limiting parking to this. So.
They're similar.
Okay.
The difference is that we've always considered on the staff level that the cul-de-sacs had the parking because they were specifically designed to be that large, because the fire truck needs the entire area to do it. Yeah, the fire truck is still going down the street with those cars parked on both sides. They like it if there's more room, but it's
okay,
still
so in that case, this really was just a recommendation. We'd like more room, but we can still get the room.
Yeah.
And hold it back.
They can turn around, they could back up, or they can do a 7-point U-turn as opposed to just a nice smooth.
Right, but how I read the letter, it says we would like or recommend that you propose it. So again, it's a recommendation. This is because of our ordinance, what's in there that says designating our fire truck, which if there's no signage, how would the resident know that it's designated fire?
Right, that's what I mentioned in that. Yeah, we've always said it only on case-by-case basis when the fire department's asked for, because most people in the places, you know, they park there occasionally, have to think of this as a specific instance where there were multiple vehicles there all the time.
Okay.
So basically, when it becomes an issue, do they ask for the signage?
When it becomes an issue in this particular cul-de-sac.
Cul-de-sac, right.
But the other cul-de-sacs might have the same issue, but we're not requiring them to put signage. An issue?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we put the sign down, we don't require the sign.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I get that. So, all these cul-de-sacs that don't have signage, which Lamont, 59, do they have the same turnaround, same width, all the same? I would
no.
think so.
Some, okay. Some of the older ones are actually smaller. There's some, I don't think they went for bigger, but there are some of the older ones that are actually smaller than that, or something like that, the radius.
And are we requiring all new cul-de-sacs from whatever point to require to build this thing? Is that part of our code requirement?
Yes, that requires 45 feet.
Okay, so.
And we require that design.
That's one of the issues I had with, I think, alternative, you know, saying no parking at all cul-de-sacs. If they meet the standard of fire trucking, it will turn around. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I logically would have a good reason to say you can't park there. If we did a blanket, no parking, and
I mean, if you made it bigger, so if you did make it 50,
yeah, 50,
54 inches, 50 feet in diameter,
right.
You can do it. Yes.
I'm just going down your alternatives, and
right.
One of them was just to say no parking at all with cul-de-sacs,
right.
And I'm just letting you know I'm not really comfortable with that if there are different sizes of cul-de-sacs, and some need to require turnaround space. Why would we say no parking?
No, I do not believe there are any cul-de-sacs that are larger than 45 feet at the previous.
Right.
Yeah.
But the new ones being built need the requirements.
If there's no parking.
Oh, if there's
no parking.
Okay. I thought they were. Okay, I missed that. I thought they were building bigger, so they did need the requirements, so we could allow parking on the new building. Okay.
Two reasons is it's a little huge, takes up a lot of room in the flats, so it's not going to have to move.
Right.
And also, when you're in a cul-de-sac, the driveways are very close together, so you usually can't park. Because of the parking permit right that we're doing that way.
Right, and it's on the road there could be temporary parking for someone who's like running in.
Yeah, you're running out, yeah.
When a developer builds a new cul-de-sac or builds a new development, a new cul-de-sac in there, it's very clear to the residents from that point on that they will get necessary no parking.
Currently, yes. Now we have the developer sign it.
Okay, and how is that notified to the residents?
Oh, it's not just the sign up there.
So there are signs in the new colors, and those are the 6 or 7?
Yeah, you're right. Well, some of the ones that are in the older ones, we put them up later, and then the one on Chain Lake Road there is the new one, the newest one that was put up by the developer prior to the new one.
And so when we made the change on this neighborhood cul-de-sac, were the residents notified at any time? So that's one issue that, like, if we're going to do this, we have to like council or the city that we have to put up signs to do it, that somehow we notify residents. They'll think it's a good assumption to assume that people know that there's no parking when they've been doing that for 4 years. Or maybe for one resident who came there, even parking there for 1 year, and all of a sudden the sign goes up. So maybe it could be preemptive or preventative to get communication going. One issue I have with doing it on a case-by-case basis is not sure if that feels how I could explain that to a resident who comes forward and says, street over is a cul-de-sac, my street is a cul-de-sac, I don't have parking, I don't see any sign there that there's no parking. And you see their parking is like, well, there is no parking there because it's a cul-de-sac, and we just assume we know there's no parking, but we have a sign. So I'm not sure, I'm curious how other council members feel about that issue. So I'll stop for now.
Thank you. That's one server. Actually, that's hit on some of the ones that I have been asking. And then part of the equity of group and having to do that is letting people know that when
flying and now we have a vehicle advisor, so we spoke to the admin, and 45 foot radius is the same, we adopted the same way in the bus lot. Over 45 is pretty tight. Are there any other considerations that the fire department takes thought of, like where the fire hydrants are?
No.
Are they going to be parked? Are they going to be in a public site? There's a fire up there, and fire hydrants on the street. The hose is going to go up there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because when they do it, basically you drop a hose at the fire hydrant, and then you
back
the
fire. Yes. And do they have a regulation that says they can't back out of one?
Actually, it does say that in the, fire code. Says that you're supposed to have a most turnaround things if the road is longer than 150 feet.
Because okay. In the school world, you can back up, you know, once you do somebody's back.
Right.
The fire department, the same
fire. At least when I was on the fire department, you always had a backup person when you did that.
So I have a lot of the same concerns.
Thank you, Councilmember Scarborough. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I'm just trying to understand by putting myself in these, let's just take the full fact that we're talking about, the president was concerned. If I'm putting myself in their shoes, I'm looking at Google Maps here and I have the site pulled up. And I'm wondering if I want to park a vehicle, is it illegal to block the sidewalk by pulling into my driveway? So I'm pretty much out of the street, but I'm blocking the sidewalk because the nose end of my vehicle is in my driveway and the back fender is, say, at the curb or at the ramp into my driveway. So it's illegal to park on top of the sidewalk. So is it illegal to park in front of my driveway as if the driveway was a curb? So say I have three cars, two are in the driveway, the third is behind those two, perpendicular to them.
In the street. Yes, it is illegal, but the police department usually only enforces that if someone complains that someone's parking from my driveway. I'm assuming you're not.
It's probably called drive yourself.
Well, yeah, yeah. But if it's your own driveway,
right?
So nobody's going to complain.
Right.
So it's legal to park in front of my own driveway as long as I'm not blocking the sidewalk.
Yeah, and it's still illegal.
It's illegal.
State law says you cannot park in front of the driveway. It's by either driveway.
Within 5 feet of the ground?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is where.
So if I'm one of these homeowners, the nearest parking for my vehicle is outside the cul-de-sac around the corner. I can see red on the curb of the corner, so it's going to be completely outside the cul-de-sac. Quite a ways away. So I don't like that. My concern is you've got 69 cul-de-sacs who most of them probably have no clue about everything we're talking about tonight. Because I live in a cul-de-sac, all the cul-de-sacs. And my understanding was that, you shouldn't block the sidewalk, but you're on a cul-de-sac, so most of your neighbors are apparently not going to call the cops that you're blocking the sidewalk was able to use that sidewalk anyway, because we're using the sidewalk to get out of the cul-de-sac, not inside the cul-de-sac. So my concern is we've got all these city residents that have no clue what we're talking about, and if we just start popping up signs or doing a massive campaign about, yeah, you can't park in the cul-de-sac, it's illegal, we're lighting a fire all of a sudden here, but it's not really a fire. It might be a little quicker or something, but it would be like throwing gas on this. So I'm concerned about that. I'll use it.
Thank you.
Curious.
Thank you, Councilor Campbell.
The 5-foot rule, what I was going to say, is the multiple cul-de-sacs. You shouldn't be parked, even if you threw out the whole concept of the fire trucks. You're within 5 feet of the driveway. Because of what was previously stated, the way the driveways are kind of aggregated together. I'm on the opposite side, and I live on a cul-de-sac. I think we should have signs up. I've gotten in numerous conversations trying to be polite. Not, you know, I go straight to the, you know, to the folks that own the home or whatever and say, hey, why didn't you move here? You know, you get this little hangover, so you can't get out of your own driveway, right? Where you can't, you know, turn around or you're blocked off, all that kind of stuff. To me, we've got a law that's on the books, and I get the concept of saying, hey, we're just going to enforce it as it goes. And in my particular scenario, I kept having to talk to the individuals that talked to them, and I was like, okay, I'm going to have to call the city and get them. When I thought I had everything, then I was able to go and say, look, I'm not trying to be correct, just don't park my driveway, you know, but you really shouldn't be walking at all. Or parking at all in the cul-de-sac. So, you know, let's, and then I didn't have any problems, you know, after that. But there's a safety component, you know, that is what Zahman is saying, and I know for several, and I was trying to, you know, find some examples where it is completely lined around. And then the other thing that I see, because they don't have signs up, is that the island in the middle, people park around the island in the middle of those cul-de-sacs. There's no sign. Right? Now you can't get around at all. You can't even do it by a fire truck or sort of emergency vehicle bin pack, or a throw in the waste management that comes down. You can't get around.
Well, I'll tell you, you can't even flip your garbage.
You get in the garbage. So here's the thing, Kevin. I got yelled at by them because I couldn't put my garbage cans out. I didn't have that because there was no place to throw them on the curb because the wall was parking. You know, and around. So I get it, and I understand it's frustrating because you're going to home run by one person from my house, but you know, a lot of covenants as HOAs have it where you have to cut the car to the driveway. You're not supposed to have them on the front either. Now, a lot of them don't get divorced. But I mean, a lot of these zones have three-car garages, plus they have three spots, you know, on their pad to park. So there's a little bit of me that says, hey, you know, there's a safety concern associated with this, where do you draw a line? And it's really good. And we have a lot of books. So I am way more towards an education thing or whatever, educate, put signs up, or do them one at a time. But I am not in any way, shape, or form what I advocate for anything that was taking away, you know, some of the stuff that's been designed off the code and safety and stuff that's in place. That's just
so, Councilmember Campbell, I have never seen anybody parked in what I call the landscape zoning, and then Brad pulls it up.
Yep, happens all the time.
I've never seen that happen. He pulled it up while you were talking.
It happens all the time.
They're Campbell
and Amber. No, mine's Amber. That's all. Yeah, it happens on Amber's all the time too. It drives me crazy.
All right, before we go back for a second to Councilmembers, Councilmember Isaacson, Councilmember Lucas, do you have anything to add? Councilmember Isaacson.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is on the safety component. It's something that comes with very trucks. And it's covered with very bad pricing, and I think that this is going to go on this left side is up tomorrow. But, you know, I think that we can talk about that. for the first.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
Thank you. First, my first thing for this. First of all, I go along with the fire department's concern. That is, there's a vote for that, and I think that's a good reason. And it's about, if they identify areas that are a problem, the address is up there. First, I was thinking, well, let's focus on problem areas and cool down areas. People more problem areas, just look at the fire department.
Adopt that part of the international building, so
Which is, that's also an addition to the National Fire Code. I actually want that added to it as an amendment, so it's not actually in base code.
Right, but their recommendation from the fire marshal fire department was, we recommend that you do this, it's safer to the condition. And so that's my concern is, it's not in the code saying you can't, it talks about a fire lane and then you have a separate standard that then defines that. That standard is created by city staff and I'm not sure if there's an opportunity for public input, but that number comes from, I would assume the fire district provides that number and how did they get that number? And then what council member Sarbo said about with the buses about having a backup person and I think it was said that, yeah, they have a backup person too, fire district. So I guess I'm not prepared to go ahead and go to this system. It's not necessarily a standard that city staff has created, which I get. I know that people are thinking about safety, but we have chosen at other times to think about public input, costs, and other things to not adopt something that the fire district has recommended. I would like to see the standard where it says that, and I would also like to know a little bit more from the fire district. Do they have a backup person? Is that recommended? Is required by them? How long does the screen have to be as a I just think whenever we impact people's parking, I get your issue is a separate issue from my people. People are walking driveways. That's a separate issue. That's not, because there are people who don't walk driveways, who do park near their houses or have thought it was legal for a long time. We've had a discussion about parking in the community. Trying to be as open and not limiting to residents being able to park. So, I mean, I hear what Tom's saying, I understand that's a safety issue, but I'm not going to
do that.
Just to be clear about the process, just to be clear about the process, so the council adopts its comprehensive plan, and then your development regulations are amended to be compliance with your comprehensive plan, and your public works standards then are amended to be in compliance with your development regulation, and council adopts all three of those. So the city council adopts those standards, not staff. And so I just want to be very, very clear about the process. So in updating the comprehensive plan in 2015, you're now in the process of updating your development regulations to be consistent with that plan, and you're also updating your development, your public works standards to be with your development regulations and implement those development regulations. And so you will be seeing that come forward to you and you will adopt those as well. And that's another opportunity then to ensure that those standards are still the ones that you are comfortable with and implement your overall policy. I also want to clarify that on the fire trucks themselves, the issue is not backing up. The issue is really access to the homes in the cul-de-sac. So they literally do have to drive around that cul-de-sac. It's not about getting in and out of it. It's about access to homes. And those developers want cul-de-sacs because they raise home values and home sales. And so the trade-off for that is that those cul-de-sacs then have to be large enough for fire access to ensure that those homes are protected. So again, it's not about blocking driveways. It's about ensuring that those homes are protected. And my concern would be that if you change that standard and allow parking, and then you implement that and somebody's home can't be accessed, that then something you might have some concerns about that.
But we have allowed parking, and we have parking on 69 cul-de-sacs, and we have parking for 20 years on 69 cul-de-sacs.
And it's my understanding that when the fire district realizes that they have a problem with parking in cul-de-sacs, that's when they're contacting the city and asking the city then to sign them to ensure that they can still access those.
Thank you. Councilor Campbell?
Yeah, so appreciate the comments. The sprinkler systems, my first kind of off the cuff, you brought this to do, you're going to bring that up.
Yeah.
was that it's even more important with the FNC ingress and egress and access components because of that decision. We're going to be proud of that. Because we did make it that. So it wasn't just financials, it was also off of our ability for our fire department to be able to respond to such an event. The parking is not a separate issue. But specifically what I was speaking to is how that is exacerbated because of the way that the driveways are accumulated. So any sort of parking that is done in a circle like this automatically gives you more of that opportunity of blocking, which when you're going to have access issues of being able to communicate in versus vehicle in that location. So the other one is that they, because we don't have, well, actually I pulled it up now and I just lost it. Don't pull in head first. A lot of dead end instances in the on a dead end cul-de-sac instead of parking parallel, but pull head end first like this. And that's where the cars can be even further, you know, bounce if you can't make it, make the pull around. I get what you're saying, I said, wait a minute, you know, we've got all of these yellow, you know, places. It's illegal today. That's why I want to make sure that we all understand. And what I would say to the comment of well, we're not enforcing it, maybe we are enforcing it. More made aware of it. Just we don't have everything assigned. There's a lot of things that are illegal today that we don't have assigned that you know everything all everywhere across. So if you feel like hey we gotta go assign everything because we want that spend, that's fine. But it is illegal today. We enforce it if we're made aware just like any sort of parking infraction. And the parking infractions that we get from different HOAs and all that kind of stuff where it's you can't do that. A lot of times it's just an education because they didn't know. And then it kind of clears up when it's not, when it's not. And we employ that type of strategy a lot of times. This would just be another one of those instances where we would use that type of philosophy. So, I'm for whether we want to go science across the board or we keep doing it, you know, as it comes along. That might be the less, it's your turn, the less gasoline on the fire or whatever, but in no way would I support anything that is taking, you know, that off. It comes from fire code. I think that's one thing that's important. You know, it is coming out of the fire code. It might not be our municipal code, but it is coming from fire code. That's it.
Thank you. So, what I'm hearing from the consensus of the alternatives to requested action, I'm hearing a consensus not to amend the Monroe Municipal Code at this time. So I am hearing a consensus for installing signage in cul-de-sacs, either some preference for doing it all at once, in quotation marks, or doing it case by case. Certainly it sounds like continue doing what we're doing today, which is installing signage as new development, so that's what we're doing today, correct? Okay. So what we'll do then is continue the case by case basis. For the remainder of this year, we discussed as part of the 2019 budget process on whether or not to continue, whether or not to do a grouping of the next year, to do all of the next year. So I can understand the funding for that, to kind of come and how it competes with other priorities. And as I'm understanding, the municipal bill coming forward again as part of the VDR QC update. And that's where we can certainly make a change at any point in time to bring it back. Alright? Does that sound good? Does anybody disagree with the consensus I think I heard? Councilmember Carvajal?
I disagree.
Understood. I understand that there's at least one or not two objections to this with that direction. Councilmember Starver, would you make an objection to that as well?
I'm okay with what you're suggesting. I still have the same concerns that started back there.
Okay.
They say first, but I want to see. I would say, why aren't we having the new developments have 55 feet for the parking and have room for the parking?
I suspect they have that option. Yeah.
Well, the developers not going to do it because they don't want to get the space. So we're placating the developer.
Well, the developer could. People buying the homes could recognize that they should have a larger cul-de-sac if they want to park on the street. That's the other side of that equation also. Anyway, Councilor Starver, you still have the floor, and I recognize what you're okay, Councilor Campbell?
No, I just, one thing I would just remind us of is that a lot of these are two, three-car garages with three flats in the front. So you're talking about a potential of six parking spaces
right on, I get it, I mean, it's frustrating, I want to park my car right in front of whatever, but it's, you buy the home, you have, you know, X amount of, you know, parking, if you want more, you buy the home, but we have folks that don't have any parking, in the different cities that have to walk around the block, they don't have a parking lot, or their apartment, town hall, whatever the case may be. I don't view this as taking away parking, you know, from across, it's trying to make sure that, you know, that we're safe, ingress, egress, and I just, I don't want to lose sight that we're not, most of these have a minimum of four parking spots, right, two car garage, plus the two in front, and unless, and I get it, most people, because they don't use their garages for parking, but their garage, yes, sir.
All right,
but it's all good.
Councilor Sherbrooke?
Well, I counter the Councilman's comment. The garage that they built on these houses now, they're not driving a local ride, and you're not putting anything in that garage, but junk. You're gonna park on the driveway because there's no way my pickup's going in these garages they built now. If you don't have a small man, they're 8 footers. My wife makes me take her car out of the garage, vehicle cars, because the mirrors have to be in, and I have to mix this side by 6 4 inches, and that side by 4 inches to get it out of the garage. So, you know, here again, the developers are pouting. I'm giving you a 3-car garage county. It's the size of a 2-car garage, and they put 3 doors on. And now you got room in the driveway. You shouldn't have more than 2 or 3 or 4 cars.
That's where I'm trying to go.
So I can have one of those big TVs in the driveway.
Okay, so I'm hearing Ben Swanson in my ear. He's reminding me that part of your UDC update that he's talking about doing is requiring that developers identify parking stalls that are on the street. So you'll have more opportunity for conversation. Oh, that's right there. Did I say that correctly?
Correct.
Okay, so part of the UDC update is that he's looking at we're talking in Planning Commission about having a requirement for on-street parking be identified as part of the subdivision. So there will be more to come on the subject later. Is there anything further tonight for public acts and firelands? Councilmember Cutterback.
It's just about assuming that the 3-car garage or that people have enough space because the family unit is a very different today and age and put maybe our perspective on what that looks like and limit kind of what's happening with extended families putting together and need the different families, which is what we're seeing.
Thank you very much, everybody. We're going to move on to the next item on the agenda. This is AB 18-154. It's the second item under discussion. The title of this is Economic Development Advisory Board. We have recommendations.
Thank you, and I prepared and provided, I think, a pretty thorough agenda with this and a PowerPoint presentation, and I recognize it's after 8 o'clock and it's hot. And so I am happy to go through this PowerPoint presentation and talk about the process that the Economic Development Advisory Board went through in order to create and forward to you this recommendation or these recommendations. Also happy to give you the shorter kind of Reader's Digest version and then let you discuss more of, like, I think the recommendations themselves and ask questions. So just looking for a preference from council about which direction you prefer shorter.
Reader's Digest, hands up.
All right, Reader's Digest version. Small.
Yes, small.
So in that case, I'm going to move forward then just to the So just really quickly, we had Economic Development Advisory Board. The council mayor forwarded recommendations of members to serve on the board, and we looked for a
cross-section of members of the community, and we have several folks here tonight that actually served and went to all of the meetings. I've got Heather Rousey from downtown, Linda Driscoll with Premier Polaris, and then Patty Gibbons representing the downtown. But we also included members of the community representing manufacturers, retailers, and banking, and real estate agents. So I think the council remembers that group of people that you approved. So I want to just recognize them. So the group actually went through and tried to answer, and did answer, I think, fairly successfully these questions in order to come to a conclusion and a recommendation for the city council. So these are the six questions. And actually, out of these questions, then came the set of recommendations that they're forwarding. Here are the recommendations. So the first one was adopt a narrative vision statement of Monroe's future based on the comprehensive plan. And this really came out of that first question of what is the community's vision. Some members of the Economic Development Advisory Board really struggled with that because we don't really have a narrative statement. All we have is a bullet point list, which I provided for you in your council agenda packet, that came out of the comprehensive plan. So it doesn't really kind of visually describe what it would want to be in the year 2040 or in the year 2050. Adopt and implement a recommended six-year plan. So this is really kind of the meat of the whole effort, was to come up with that six-year plan. And that six-year plan is in your council agenda packets this evening. And what they found was really that there were kind of a set of themes. There was business recruitment and retention. There was gateways. There was tourism promotion and marketing. There was parking. There was parks. There was wayfinding and gateway signs. And those actually came out of all of the economic development plans that the group took a look at going back into 2006. We also talked about postponing some projects. So this was really a fiscally constrained plan. We wanted to make sure that we just weren't talking about a wish list of ideas that we wanted, that we really honed down in and ensured that the revenues that were available to fund economic development really matched up with the projects. And I think that the committee did an excellent job at coming to those conclusions. We brought in a couple of technical experts. We had Ben Swanson from Community Development talking about what is the planning process and how we develop those plans and the recommendations. And then Becky Hassard also from our finance department talking about what are the funding sources that are available. They also then recommended increasing revenues to support priority projects. So even after we matched up revenues and expenses and kept projects out of the list, we still had a funding shortfall, and so there were two recommendations that came out of that funding shortfall. One was to use $200,000 of the city's bank's capacity to put towards these projects on an annual basis, and then the second one was adopting a sewer and stormwater utility tax and using a portion of that revenue, again, to support economic development priorities. They also recommended then that we continue with the Economic Development Advisory Board. So the board felt like after the project list is completed, after the council makes its move forward on projects that they want to include in the six-year plan, that there really was a board available then to ensure that those projects are being implemented. And that was, again, kind of one of the core issues, or I guess recommendations that came out of this plan, is that, or this effort, is that there's been a lot of planning that has gone on, but not necessarily a lot of implementing that has gone on out of these plans. So the board really wanted to ensure that the priority projects that the council adopted are actually going to move forward and be implemented. The other role that the Economic Development Advisory Board then would play would be the liaison then between the city council and the business community. And then also to ensure that as the council is thinking about regulations to adopt, that there's a group that is looking at that from the business community's perspective too, and providing input into those regulations that you're adopting, thinking about them from that perspective. In moving this forward to the Parks Board and the Planning Commission, the Parks Board wanted to ensure that there were some performance measures. So in addition to just being a watchdog group, what are we doing to ensure that these things are moving forward on schedule? And they were looking for some reporting back to the city council around these performance measures. So that really, I could go through the rest of these, what is the city's vision, and answering each one ponder those questions. I don't know if there's a particular topic that the council wanted to focus in on, maybe the recommendations around funding options, because I think you're fairly familiar with the rest of the material that was presented. It was all new to members of the Economic Development Advisory Board, but I think the city council is fairly familiar with them. So at this point, kind of, what's your pleasure?
Did you want to move the projects?
So these are the plans that the city council had previously adopted, and what the committee did was they actually broke up into small groups. Each group took a look at one of these plans, and they went to that prioritization exercise using dots, and we had expenses associated with each one of these exercises. And you can see, again, all of those projects are listed in the materials that you have. So on the current revenue sources, we looked at general funds, beginning balance, one-time construction sales tax, lodging tax, and real estate excise tax. I think this one still has a 4% effect. It's all the 2%. I'm just making that change again. This one's a good opportunity. That should be 0.25%, not 0.025%. I think it's changed in your agenda packet. So again, this is the annual estimated revenue going forward. $1.5 million, and then over the 6-year period, because that's what we're looking at, almost $9 million, $8.8 million.
So under the REIT, it should be 0.25?
0.25.
Okay, but it's the...
These numbers are correct.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that number's correct. It should be the percentage.
0.25. Okay. Yeah. Any other questions?
So I mentioned that there were projects that came out of each one of those lists. So when we took a look at the visitor information plan, the tourism promotion and marketing plan, the downtown development plan, the economic plan, all of those had similar projects in them. So there was just these series of project types. And what we did then was determine how much each one of those projects cost, and then scheduled them out for the 6-year period, and we ended up with just a little over $11 million in project expenses.
That's what
we're about. So I saw that in there, so is there more, I didn't see, maybe I missed it, but is there more definition on what gateway means?
Yes, so if you took a look at that attachment that's broken out by the project plan, you can see under visitor information, or a visitor assessment, the project type, and then right next to that, there should be a column that says this is a gateway, this is a wayfinding, this is business recruitment and retention.
Okay, I'll
have
to look at that.
It would be attachment, let's say 3. So be after the PowerPoint presentation, there's a list of projects. Yeah, so like for example, on page 41 of 44 is the 2007 sports brand.
Okay.
Right. And so this came out of that plan.
Okay.
And then next to it, you see the project description and then the project
site. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. With the project process there. And then what we did was then schedule them out for 6 years just to see what does the 6-year plan look like. So the revenues versus the expenses, we have $11 million in revenues, $8.8 million in expenses, and a $2.2 million gap over the 6-year period. And that's where we came back to the board and said, we have a gap, there's 3 options for you. You can reduce projects to close that gap, you can raise revenues, or you can do a combination of both, reduce some projects and raise some revenues, and the board recommended that we do the combination. So we took some projects out of the list and then added some revenues to fund the priority projects. So here are the projects that we recommended that we postpone, and you'll see those on the list of projects beginning on page 32 of 44,
and you'll see the projects that were postponed in the strike room. So this is the summary.
So I'm going to try to post the morning.
Great. So we summarize them then in this list here. So really, this was an exercise of trying to boil down information, right? We started off with a really big list of six plans, with a list of, you know, multiple projects in each plan, and then having the board go through, prioritize those projects, and then just kind of keep narrowing down the list.
I'm just interested in the projects that we prioritized out and put from a recommendation. Was it unanimous?
I don't know. It was consensus, let me say that.
That's what I was looking for. So yeah. There was, okay.
There was a lot of dialogue.
That doesn't mean much.
So what we ended up doing when we had the list of projects then, and we had the funding go through and prioritize each one of those, we actually sent out to the board and said rank these, you know, one through four, and we dropped off the projects that received the highest scores in this instance. A one was a top priority, two was second priority. So anything that received a four or five within each one of these categories, and retention, tours and promotion and marketing, wayfinding. So those projects didn't compete against themselves, they only competed in their category. That made sure that we had a good broad spectrum of projects.
That's okay.
Did the committee prioritize, like, between gateway and tourism promotion? Was there priority done around that, like we had something else
out.
Okay.
Yes. But keep in mind, some of those categories have dedicated funding sources, or there's funding sources available for like tourism, i.e. lodging taxes, that would not be available
for another thing.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right, and that's why the projects are when it's fiscally constrained, because we needed to make sure that project that we dropped off the list came from funding sources where we had a funding shortfall, right? It's not like $2 million in aggregate, it's $2 million from different funding sources.
So that was looked at when we dropped that off.
Yep, so it is all tied together and reconciled. Any questions? So we also, as I mentioned, went through the exercise to say if we had to close the entire funding gap just by dropping off projects, what does that look like? And this was just the city staff going through the exercise of saying these are the projects that we could drop in order to get this balance. The challenge is that so many of the projects have really small dollar amounts, and so few of them have really large dollar amounts, that you end up having to really drop off some connects to downtown, to the river, build sidewalks, and where is the... So these are the more expensive projects that had to come off the list in order to come up with a $2.2 million investment. Okay. So here's the new sources of funding that we discussed: property tax bank capacity and sewer and stormwater utility tax. And we introduced these to the City Council back in February at your budget workshop, and talked about using some of these to actually balance the budget and pay off the North Hills debt. So these weren't new funding sources to council. Funding sources we've discussed before, so it would be taking a portion of those same two funding sources and using those for economic development. It's the only real new sources of funding that are available to the city. So during the budget process, the council's going to have a conversation around, you know, what does that look like in order to pay off North Kelsey debt, if that's a priority for you, and then also move forward on some of these other projects that
the Economic Development Advisory Board is recommending.
And if I may add, so this was an area that we presented to the Parks Board and the Planning Commission. We were very frank in asking the question. This was the EDAB's recommendation. Is this something that you could embrace and support and advocate? And Parks Board was, seemed like they were pretty unanimous in saying yes, because again, with the performance measurements, as they put it, there was definite, you're going to get something for money, so there was a clear connection. Planning Commission, I think, had a little bit more discussion about it, but at the end, the general consensus was yes, they could support this recommendation also. So I wanted you guys to be aware that was the discussion that occurred with those boards when we made this participation.
And then we also provided to the board then the impact, so we'll share those with you too, so you can see those as well. So on property tax bank capacity, here's the property values across the top, so depending upon your own property's assessed value. And this is the amount, the current rate under each one of those assessed values. And then with this bank capacity, if we were to use 200,000 of bank capacity, this would be the difference per year. So if you're talking on a $250,000 home, a difference of $1.79 per month. And on a $600,000 home, you're talking about $4.31 a month, not $200,000 of bank capacity. And then this is the same calculation for what happens to a property in 2020. Any questions?
Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I was just going to say, just a clarification. Using the bank capacity, that would be in addition to or not based on what we did that year in regards to the rate, correct? So I'm not saying do the same this year, but you could do a 1% and then also use the bank capacity to not, correct?
Correct.
Just one level of attention.
So the other question then, of course, is what is the impact of the sewer and stormwater utility tax? And again, here's the monthly impact. Here's the current rate for sewer and storm and water. We already have a 10% utility tax on water. So here's your total utility bill now. And then depending upon your usage, the sewer could go up as much as $2, storm as much as $1.18, so $3.18. On the low end, it would be nothing for sewer and 50 cents for storm for a total of 50 cents impact.
Yes.
Is that money restricted in how we use it for something
that's not that? No. So utility tax is just like any other tax in the general fund.
We can do
its flexibility is just based on what state law allows that you can use tax for.
The other thing, too, to keep in mind is that we've been looking at the sewer fund in general, right, for capital projects. And what we haven't been doing in the sewer fund is leveraging our rates for debt to borrow money in order to do sewer improvements. We've been saving money and then doing projects as money is available. And so one way to stretch out our sewer utility and provide equity amongst ratepayers, current ratepayers and future ratepayers, actually to use debt service more strategically than we're doing now, not just in our sewer utility, but in all of our utilities. And so there's a potential, and we're looking at this right now, that we could do a 10% utility tax and have no impact to the sewer fund. But we're going to have to have a conversation amongst staff and with the sewer utility to determine whether or not that's feasible.
That's why you have a high and a low potential impact. Depends on how that conversation plays out. So, because remember, utility tax is on the gross receipts of the utility. It is not a tax on top of, like, the sales tax.
Any questions?
Thank you.
So one thing we've been talking about before is about the utility tax. And this is something that I never understood about utility taxes until I worked with Ms. Hazard. And that's that the purpose of a utility tax is to ensure that our utilities are being treated the same way that any private business is being treated. Because remember, they're managed as enterprise funds. But because they're government entities, they're not taxed. Their property is not taxed. And
And so this is a way to ensure that not only is there equity between city funds, but there's also equity between the city and the private industry.
That was very well.
So what we did then too was we just wanted the committee to have a recognition about where our utilities fit in with our surrounding communities, right? So how do we rank? That's always a question that comes up whenever we're talking with city councils about changing utility rates. Great Falls does this every year. They go out and check with their neighbors. We happen to be on this list. That's why Granite Falls is highlighted in a list that comes from Granite Falls. And so you can see that utility bills kind of break down into sections. There's a group of cities that are in the $130 range for utilities. There's a couple of Granite Falls and Arlington that are at $111. And then there's several that are in the $60 to $70 range. And remember, those are really based upon what are the needs in your community. That's what really drives your utility rates. So what kind of improvements do you need to be making in capital? You know, how big is your community when it comes to managing its plant itself? And then what's the cost for operations and maintenance? That's what drives your utility rates. Next one. Go ahead. Yeah. So these are the top level recommendations with the $8.1 million price tag on those. Again, here's the different groupings that the Economic Development Advisory Board discovered when it was doing its work, that we had all these projects that came out of the different plans, but they all kind of fell into these similar groups. And then you've got the entire list of projects on the back, so you can see all of the detail. So there you go. So we're stopping.
Any questions, Councilmembers? Councilmember Camp emailed me on Sunday and requested that we get a statement record from. So, thank you for your work on establishing the foundation for an economic review process. These addresses to need now members. I can appreciate the hard work it takes to get the process off the ground and moving forward. And to do this while holding down jobs is commendable. I have reviewed your 5 proposals and look forward to further discussions on budget impacts and changes. I agree that some form of economic advisory process should be retained and expanded to include review of proposed ordinances. This would provide valuable insights to how planning commission and council decisions impact our business community. One suggestion, if the group continues, please consider subcommittees if you look at the impact of the city policy on specific types of businesses such as retail, entertainment, etc. Once again, thank you for your hard work and I look forward to working with you in the future. Thank you. All right. Councilmember Hanford.
I just want to say thank you to all the people that have worked hard on this. A lot of members. It seems like we could start to put that in
progress.
Yeah, I was just going to go to comments. It really helps to have more people involved in giving the input and taking time to do this. It's outstanding.
And I also thank our EDAP members. I think you all did a great amount of work. I look forward to having a more robust conversation about the projects and about funding those projects going forward. I know that some of the next steps are we're going to talk about this, about some of these in the next couple weeks. And then we will be bringing forward a budget proposal. So I know this is the last night to this. I'm excited about the projects that I see. So thank everybody very much. But one of the things I like is it's not just the physical projects, but it's also about the political realm. And I think we're going to have some really positive benefits for our community. Anybody else have any proof? Do any of the board members have anything they'd like to say? Do you have anything to wrap up?
I just want to say that I went through rather quickly the amount of effort that the board put into this. I think I mentioned it in materials, but they did meet two times a month, starting in January, all the way through to June, and so it was quite a commitment. I know in talking about what the next steps for the board itself is, the council and mayor are supportive of continuing the board. There were a couple of members that are prepared to continue to serve on that board, and there are several though that just made the one-time commitment to assist for several months, and so they're going to have to be talking out. So I thought it might be a good opportunity when we come forward in the next couple of weeks to bring back in the board and recognize them.
Is there anything further this evening? Okay, seeing nothing else, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. So motion to adjourn from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. We're here to do